The conference is now being recorded.
Welcome to the investor conference call for the NAOS Listed Investment Companies. Your host is Sebastian Evans, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of NAOS Asset Management Limited. Please go ahead, Sebastian.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. Hopefully everyone can hear me. If you can't hear me, just send an email and I'm sure someone will let me know as soon as possible. As Lisa mentioned, this is the investor conference call for the third quarter of FY 2019. So as we go through these, we tend to do two conference calls a year, followed by our two roadshows, which covers essentially each of the quarters for the financial year. The presentation material has been lodged this morning on the ASX. So if you type up any one of the three LICs, you'll be able to download the presentation material. And I think it's also been sent around to everyone who's on our subscription list as well. So I'll try and get through this in as much detail as I can without being too time-consuming. Obviously, on slide two, I'm not going to go through the disclaimer, but as I say at all my presentations, you know, I do tend to speak about certain stocks, but obviously this is general advice. Do your own homework. Seek external advice. This is not personal advice. On slide three, just obviously the to do and what we've strived to do over the past almost 6.5 years now. The first one is really to protect investor capital whilst providing sustainable growing stream of fully franked dividends and long-term capital growth above our respective indexes. So pleasingly, we've been able to do that in two of our LICs. In the newest one, clearly we haven't done that to date. And clearly the last 12 to 18 months has been somewhat challenging for our investment style and philosophy, but I'll get into that in more detail. Part two to the investment mandate is obviously to provide investors with a concentrated exposure to undervalued listed micro-cap, small-cap and mid-cap industrial type businesses. So as most of our followers on this call dialed in, people would know that we don't invest in resource stocks. We don't invest in early stage technology stocks or even sort of later stage technology businesses. We really tend to invest in industrial businesses that we can understand, that are simple to understand, that we believe can grow over the longer term, regardless of their liquidity or size profile. So we really do provide people with a very niche exposure to the smaller end of the stock market. And in our view, as we've said all along, there's very few peer comparisons to funds like this, rightly or wrongly. Slide four, investment beliefs. I know you've all heard this before, but I will go through it. As you would know, for anyone who's been a shareholder in NCC or NAC, we tend to focus on value investments that can grow over the longer term. So one of the questions I've got here is on Saunders, for example. Guests may look expensive today, but we clearly believe it represents value over the longer term, and we believe it will grow its earnings over the longer term. We believe that, quality over quantity, so we only have, 8 to 12 positions in each of the funds. We believe in the ASX is thousands, essentially, of low-quality businesses that are essentially uninvestment grade. We tend to hold a business for 5-plus years. A good example of that is Nero Group. Pleasingly, it's been one of our better investments, and you would have seen, if anyone follows us closely, that we sold a large chunk of our shareholding. That would have been this month, actually, if you see our substantials. So it shows that we can build big stakes in these businesses, and at the same time, we have been able to start realising some of these gains where there are gains, and Enero is a great example of that. Performance versus liquidity, clearly, because we run closed-end funds, we don't need to concentrate on the liquidity as much. We tend to focus on the quality of the business. We don't follow the index, which has clearly hurt us over the past sort of short-term 12 months, with many of those more momentum stocks really driving the index higher. The industrial piece I've touched on, we have a very stringent ESG filter, which many people still don't seem to realise. But as it says there, we don't invest in any businesses with a direct relationship or revenue drivers derived from sales in regards to tobacco, gambling, nuclear, uranium, controversial weapons, coal mining operations, or oil and gas production companies, as an example. So it does slim down our universe, but it provides people who have more of an ESG focus in this space with an option in the small cap space. And then clearly, management alignment is of the utmost importance to us. So as I tell everyone, all of my investable funds are invested in the NAOS funds, and family and friends represent a significant chunk. And we expect the same from our investee companies. So many of our businesses tend to be founder-led businesses with, you know, significant equity holdings. So they're very much aligned with ordinary shareholders. Just moving on to slide five. So really touches on, you know, the quarter that was. And I think if you look at it, I'm sure everyone on the call would be really looking at the quarter and saying, wow, it was an extremely strong quarter, and really who saw it coming? And it all really changed when the US Fed decided not to increase rates and really became a lot more dovish on their views of their, I suppose, rate outlook. But I think the key to show is, yes, you know, the US market is up 15% basically since the 1st of January. Well, the NASDAQ's up 20% since the 1st of January. So these are, you know, stellar gains in a short period of time. But what I've been sort of taught, you know, or mentored as through my career is, you know, the fact is that the second fewest number of shares have changed hands on any trading day in 2019 on the 5th of April. So I think, you know, I was reading the Wall Street Journal this morning, and it was the same again last night. Trading volumes in the US are becoming smaller and smaller and smaller each day. And that's showing you there's a real lack of conviction in equity markets, especially the US. It tends to be much more positive or negative when things go up and down on big volumes, but you're seeing the US market really been driven on very small volumes as people become probably somewhat skittish. And I'm sure you talk to investors, everyone really looks at you saying, well, why does the market continue to go higher? And as that shows you, it's factual when it means, you know, the market's going higher on fewer and fewer number of shares. There's no conviction really in the rally. People are really just trying to invest to try and keep up with the index movements. Without a doubt, the biggest or the most notable event that's happened in the Australian markets is, you know, the rise and the continued rise of what we call, you know, the WACC stocks. So the ones we look at are, you know, Afterpay, WiseTech, Xero, Appen, Altium. These are the what we call hyper growth stocks that are growing at a you know, high rate, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50%, albeit probably off smaller bases. And really what the market's willing to pay for those businesses. As you would be aware, some of these businesses in share price terms have gone really from strength to strength. So Afterpay, for example, which is a really like a, it's almost like a lay-by business where you can buy a pair of jeans in four equal installments, but you can take the jeans from day one. You know, it's now capped at $6 billion. To put that in example, if you look at Reece, I think Reece, for example, is not even capped as much as that, albeit been around for many more years. To put that in context, when you look at the S&P Small Ordinaries Index, it's up 14.6% from the 1st of January to the end of March. Now, each one of those stocks are actually have been in the Small Ordinaries Index. And if you look at those stocks and you equally weight them, they're up a combined, you know, or in index term, 50%. So if you were to strip those out of that index, you'd find the index wouldn't be up 14.6. It'd probably be up half as much as that. So it shows you the index is becoming very top heavy and driven by a lot of these stocks, because these are the stocks where people are really, it's the only place where they're finding growth, albeit you're paying a significant premium for this growth. To give you an idea of the valuation metrics that people are looking at in regards to some of these businesses, you know, we looked at some consensus data. You know, if you look at the ASX 300 Industrials Index, it's for the next 12 months, so 12 months forward, so it's essentially FY20, the average multiple is 13 times. So 13 times what EBITDA that business is going to make next year, adding back the debt and taking off any free cash. When you look at some of these other businesses, you can see the multiples are significantly higher. So Afterpay, for example, is almost 70 times. WiseTech's 45 times, Xero's 45 times, Appen 27, and Altium 34 based on consensus data. So, you know, clearly the market is factoring in with those high multiples that those growth numbers can last for a lot longer than, you know, 2 or 3 years. You're really implying that they can last for, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And we believe when you look at the pace and the industries and of how much change is afoot and the amount of competitors coming into some of these spaces, we think those, you know, the risk-return equation is really not adequate, and that's not where we're willing to put our investors' capital, because we think the potential for downside risk is too significant. To illustrate that on slide six, I really just put in a basically a chart of the 2000 or the two-year return profile of these businesses in relative returns. Sorry, it's actually a, so from the end of 2018, so it's actually just for the three-month period, as you can see, those stocks are up almost 50% relative to the index, which is up 15%. So I did an exercise. If you want to go back over 2 years and you own those five stocks, to put this in an example, and hopefully someone on this call has managed to own all five of these stocks over the last 2 years, if you had an equally weighted basket of these five businesses, you'd find that your return in relative terms is 500% compared to the index, which I think is still in the low teens. Keeping in mind that all of these businesses were in the index, so the index returns probably essentially zero over 2 years, yet the these five stocks in an equally weighted basket, you've returned 500%. So it really shows you some of these outlier businesses and how they've pushed the index higher over that period. Another interesting, on slide seven, this is another interesting fact that we've obviously come across in the past few weeks. You know, if you read the news more recently, there's been a lot more chat around some of these IPOs that are coming to market in the States. There's probably been a couple in Australia that are coming up, driven by, you know, technology valuations are very high. There's even an example of a competitor Afterpay from the US has actually decided to list here because they've seen the demand for Afterpay shares. But if you look at the larger end of technology stocks in the US, it gives you an idea of how they've performed. So, you know, more recently, the big one that's come to market is Lyft, which is a competitor to Uber. Uber's coming to market as well. For everyone that uses Pinterest, that's coming to market. I think it was given an $8 billion valuation this morning. But to see the actual performance of some of these businesses, I think a lot of people would be a little bit, not shocked, but surprised. So you can see by the blue column, it shows you the last private valuation. So what price did people put money in before it listed at the very last time? So you can see Lyft, for example, they put it in at a $15 billion valuation. If you look at the market value at IPO, clearly there's a big uplift normally in the IPO rounds. And then you can see the market capitalization today. So you can see a lot of those, if you look at Dropbox, for example, and Snap, they're actually below not only the IPO price, but they're also below the last private price. And if you look at Lyft today, because obviously Uber has been repriced down because of lack of demand, you'd see Lyft is actually below its last private valuation if we were to update this chart as well. So you can see three out of the five are now below the last private valuation rounds, and it's showing you some of these valuations are being hard to justify, and the market's finally starting to look through some of them, albeit not at probably the rate that we would expect. But there has been a lot more talk around saying a lot of these so-called unicorn technology companies are coming to market with no profitability, yet commanding valuations in excess of, you know, $10, $20, $30 billion. In the case of Uber, I think, you know, you're getting up to closer to over, you know, $50 billion. So it really shows you how much money is out there looking for a home in some of these technology stocks, albeit without any profitability. Slide eight. So clearly the slide that everyone likes to talk about, the performance that was for the quarter. So pleasingly, all the funds were up to the quarter. You would probably expect that when obviously the quarter for the small ordinaries index and the ASX 300 industrial index was very strong as well. So pleasingly, the funds were up, albeit they underperformed their respective indexes, which I've obviously tried to touch on previously, talking about some of those other stocks. If you look at the NTAs, so NCC is $1.07, NSC 75 cents, and NAC is $1. And you can see 3 month performance, 1 year performance, and the inception performance for each of the funds relative to their histories. Touching on slide nine, I won't go through this in too much detail because I touched it on the roadshow, but really looks at our ability to protect long-term capital. So yes, we have underperformed more recently, but if you look at our statistics, and this is why we put these slides in, we do believe our investments represent much safer investments over longer term relative to the index, and this has been proven in these statistics. So when the market is down, albeit it feels like it hasn't been down in quite a while now, everyone's forgotten about the correction of the fourth quarter of calendar year 2018, we are able to protect capital compared to the index, albeit more recently we haven't been able to keep up in the roaring bull market of the last 3 months. Touching on the specific funds, so there's a couple of slides here and then I'll go into more market commentary and stock commentary to give people a bit of a flavour on what's going on in each of the funds. Touching on NCC, so this is a new slide and we'll try to illustrate it a little bit better, but this looks at the dividend profile of NCC. So clearly in late February, we obviously paid our first half dividend of 3.75 cents fully franked. Places the stock on a 6.71% fully franked yield. And as you can see, since inception, we've paid almost 40 cents out in dividends compared to the dollar IPO price of about 6 years ago. On slide 11, this is a slide that we used to put in and we took out, and now we'll put it back in again just because I feel it gives a bit more clarity on what we invest in and why. This just looks at all the investments since inception that have contributed the most to NCC's performance. So we've also given a bit more clarity on what's a current holding and what isn't. So we've never done that before. But you can see, obviously, BSA has been the biggest contributor to the investment performance of the fund and is still a holding. So you can see Caledon is no longer a holding, but you basically from that slide, you can see that BSA, COG, CGR and EGG all continue to be positions within NCC portfolio and have been significant contributors to the fund since the 26th of February 2013. The real idea of the slide, though, was really trying to highlight what we invest in, the type of businesses. So you can see they're all industrial-type businesses. Some are financial businesses, transport businesses, advertising businesses, telecom businesses. That's really where we focus a lot of our time and energy. Touching on NSC, so once again, we've changed the slide here, but you can see since under NAOS management now, NSC has paid 8 cents fully franked since NAOS took over, obviously, in the first half of FY18. Most recently, we paid a quarterly dividend of 2.5 cents fully franked. So as you can see there, it places the stock on an 8.8% fully franked yield. Clearly, it's a high yield, so, without pointing out the obvious, based on performance, people either believe that, the fund will perform and that dividend yield is sustainable, or, people continue to believe that, obviously, the performance of the fund won't recover, and then, obviously, that dividend yield may not be sustainable over a 2 or 3 year view, but clearly it represents a significant fully franked yield. Moving on to the contributors to the fund, so we're trying to give people a little bit more clarity on where we've made our money in this fund. As you can see there, Over the Wire Group's been the biggest contributor to the fund, continues to be a very big core holding of this business. It's a telecommunications business that operates in the SME, small to medium business space, has clients such as AP Eagers, Village Roadshow as examples. Canera Group, I spoke about, is an advertising business, does a lot of work in the technology space, actually, in the States. So I mentioned Pinterest. They're actually working with that business on their IPO as an example. Service Dream was a contributor to this fund, but has been removed more recently. Tot, I've spoken about before, but really provides funding in that commercial construction space where the banks have pulled out. And TGP, I get asked this a lot, but TGP is no longer a holding in the fund. It's only TOT. Touching on NAC, you can see there we've paid out almost 20 cents in fully franked dividends since inception. As NSC has moved to quarterly, NAC has moved to quarterly dividends, and we paid a 2.7 cent fully franked dividend as well. That represents, if you annualise that, represents a 6.19% fully franked dividend yield at the current share price. To give people a little bit more colour, obviously you can see some of the contributors to the fund. So you can see that obviously your Service Stream has been the biggest contributor since inception there, is no longer a holding. And you can see some of the ones that continue to be holdings. Obviously Elders is a one we've put back in after the recent rain events. And M&F Group as well continues to be a core holding in this business. And just the stakes, we ran into this problem last time. A lot of people see one page there, and I think they tend to get a little bit scared. But as the asterisk states, that was a short position. So we do have the ability to short in this fund. We do have one current short in the portfolio because we want to mitigate obviously the volatility of the fund, but we do believe, especially in this market, there are adequate opportunities out there to hopefully benefit from shorting a number of more selective businesses. So in that case, that one was a significant short that proved to be a good short investment. Slide 16. Everyone obviously likes to talk about stocks, and keeping in mind that clearly the third quarter of FY19 is quite an eventful quarter because you go through essentially half-year results for many of our businesses. So I'll try to touch on the key investments across the group as best I can, but obviously I'm happy to take questions. Obviously the most topical one will be M&F Group, as it's a large holding in the group. You know, disappointingly, as the business said, they lowered their guidance for FY19 by 5%. And subsequently, the shares at one stage fell by 12 to 14%. Pleasingly, though, they managed to keep their FY20 guidance. And as I've stated, you know, if that business is able to hit their FY19 guidance, then essentially, if you get the second half that they need to hit that figure and annualise it, it gives you their FY20 figure. So we believe if they can't hit the figure, then essentially FY20 is very conservative. It's good to see the management team, they sold their residential ADSL business a few weeks ago, albeit it's a small business, but we believe it's just a great way to really simplify this business. You know, a lot of people don't understand it. They complain of too many divisions, wholesale, retail, global, domestic. And we think this is just a very good way, inexpensive way, to simplify the business, which we think will lead to a higher multiple as more and more of the earnings becomes recurring in nature. The second VoIP network, so as we've said, M&F has a large VoIP network. So probably the VoIP network in Australia has the third amount of minutes traded on it or used on it in Australia. Pleasingly, they've just launched their second network, which is in New Zealand, and they've given guidance that their network in Singapore, which they're building out as well, will be up and running in the next 3 to 6 months. You know, we think this is important because they've shown that the model works in Australia. Now they're hopefully going to prove that, you know, in New Zealand and Singapore and hopefully other nations that they can do the same model, and the model can stand up. You know, I think the most important point on that fourth point is in my most recent commentary, we mentioned a business called Bandwidth. You know, a business that very few people would know. It's a business that's listed in NASDAQ. A lot of people say, well, why am I talking about this? You know, the reason why I'm talking about this, if anyone has any free time, go and have a look at the most recent CEO transcript for their most recent results call. You know, this is a business you could essentially change the name Bandwidth and call it M&F and it'd be identical. You know, they have almost the same customer base. Bandwidth has a VoIP network through North America. They're now expanding into the UK, a bit like M&F's expanding to Singapore and New Zealand. You know, the big difference though is interesting, just from a factual point of view, Bandwidth has the same gross profit generation as M&F, give or take. $5 million off a gross profit base of 60 to 70 million. But when you look at the market capitalization, Bandwidth capped at 2 billion Australian dollars compared to M&F at 300 million. So that's the opportunity we believe there is for M&F. But, you know, ultimately, you know, time will tell whether or not that eventuates or not. Enero Group was, you know, clearly the standout probably across the three funds, you know. For the first time in 5 years, this business has gone from essentially a restructure machine, steady the ship, to delivering 15% organic revenue growth in a business or an industry where it's probably hard to generate those revenue growth figures in a half, let alone in a year. They had some great client wins, you know, and as I highlight there, one of their large clients now is Adobe in the US for everyone who uses PDF Creator out there. You know, it's an Adobe product. And it really highlights that, you know, Enero were able to get in the door with Adobe, but once you're in, you know, some of these businesses are just, they're monsters in terms of their size. And Enero has been able to grow that revenue pie with Adobe, for example. And there are plenty of other examples out there like NetApp, another US business, Facebook, as they mentioned, they have gone from one office to five offices. There's lots of opportunities for Enero to grow the revenue base just within their existing customer bases because some of these businesses are huge, you know, and the growth that they've seen over the past 2 or 3 years has been extraordinary, so they do need the support. Pleasingly, you know, I get asked all the time, you know, when can they, you know, exit or realise an investment? You know, we own 24% of Enero, at one stage, we've been able to reduce that to 17%. And it really works on the analogy I've stated time and time again, that, you know, successful in business, successful investments are easier to get out of, obviously, than unsuccessful ones. You know, in this state here, as an example, we were approached by two fund managers who obviously couldn't acquire Enero shares because it was too illiquid. You know, so they offered us a price to acquire a significant chunk of Enero, allows us to realise our investments, or some of our investment, free up some cash for other opportunities, and essentially reweight the portfolio. Just a more of an industry probably topic, but for everyone out there who knows a business called Accenture, it's only got a market capitalization of $155 billion. You know, they acquired a business last week called Droga5. You know, has a very similar amount of staff to Egg, so about 500 to 600 people. You know, was acquired for circa 2x revenue. So to put that in what we believe is 2x revenue, but to put that in context, that's about $400 million compared to Enero's market cap of about 130, 140. So Deloitte, EY, KPMG, essentially they continue to buy a lot of these digital creative agencies to hopefully give their clients an end-to-end offering. CML Group and Smart Group, more recent ones. Obviously, CML Group's the largest position in NCC. You know, a financing business, which has probably been on the nose. I think to give it some context, you know, look at financing businesses in general in Australia. You've had businesses such as Afterpay go from strength to strength, essentially, from share price terms. And then you probably had some of these more seasoned businesses, leasing businesses, such as Access Today is a recent one that went into insolvency. Silverchef have had their issues. You know, they were providing rental equipment around things like coffee machines. You know, they've gone from $5 or $6 to $1. There have been a lot of problems in this space. Flexi Groups have problems more recently as well. And that's probably somewhat, in our view, probably taken the shine off CML, albeit it has almost no exposure in the space. And they operate in obviously invoice factoring and invoice discounting space. You know, provided a result that was 30% up on the previous half. You know, the shares at one stage were 42 cents in December when there was very little appetite for microcap exposure, and then pleasingly have re-rated to 58 cents. What we liked about the business, though, is obviously they're expanding into a lower risk form of financing in regards to invoice discounting. They brought in a CEO out of the UK who ran a big business over there for Bibby, knows it like the back of his hand, really gives them some credibility and some management expertise around rolling out their new product, which has already started. What probably set the business back, though, in share price terms was that the CEO sold a small amount of his shares at 49 cents in March, which clearly didn't do our performance any favours. And this is a hard one because this has probably happened a couple of times now. But, you know, as I said in our recent report, you know, the CEO and his family still represent, direct relatives, you know, represent 10% of the shares on issue. This is the first time that, you know, they've ever sold shares in the 6 years we've been an investor. And I think it's, you know, when you look at the devil's in the detail, I think when you look at some of these founder-led businesses and you look at what some of these people are paid and how they're incentivized, you find that there's not many short-term incentives. They tend to be lower salaries. They tend to be much more aligned with investors. So, you know, at some stage, they will need to realize a portion of their investment to, you know, probably balance out their risk profile, you know, acquire their first home as an example here. And we believe that obviously the market's probably seen, you know, try to read too much into it. And we believe this business represents an excellent investment opportunity over the short to medium term. You know, interesting to see in the paper that, you know, Latitude Financial today, which is owned by KKR, it was reported in the paper that they're looking to acquire, another financing business in regards to Zip or something else like that. So there's a lot of M&A activity in this space as the banks continue to retreat. Smart Group. This is a business that's been a big contributor for our fund over the time, and, you know, pleasingly we removed it from the fund, and we've recently added it again as the stock's gone from $13 to $8 over a 6 month time period. This was compounded recently, just like CML Group, by the CEO selling 25% of his holding at a significant discount. And then subsequently you had the chairman and a number of other directors buy a significant amount of stock the following day. We believe, and, you know, that this really sort of, there's some very bipolar views on this business, but We think at the end of the day, this business is a business that generates a lot of good free cash flow. All the IT development and research is expensed. There's no amortization, there's no capitalization. And when you look at the SIQ customer base, and this is where it gets a little bit topical, is, you know, when you look at people who novate or lease cars, do novated leasing for cars and salary packaging and things like that, you know, it tends to be the more healthcare or people who work in healthcare, education, who acquire a car from anywhere between $25,000 and $35,000-$40,000 for a car purchase. You know, it's not the, you know, probably the high flying, you know, finance executive who wants to buy, you know, spend XYZ on a car. You know, because a lot of people say if the Labor government does get in, then obviously they'll come after something like this. But I think when you look at the detail and the customer base and who it affects, you know, it really affects, you know, more, you know, middle class Australia as opposed to what a lot of other people think. And we think that really gives Smart Group a lot of defensive characteristics, and that was really shown in their results, where they, whereby they said, you know, the number of leases year on year, the growth is probably flat. When you look at new car sales are down almost 19% for the year. So it shows you that that part of the market is still fairly resilient, it's really the higher end part of the market where people just aren't buying cars because they can't get financing, they don't have the cash. Credit is a lot tighter than what it used to be. So we think, yeah, it may not shoot the lights out, but they've got a great balance sheet, great management team, proven management team. You know, Devin's taken this business, as we saw him last week. You know, when he started, the business was doing $600,000 in revenue. You know, today it's capped at, off the top of my head, it'd be close to $1 billion. So, you know, in the space of 8 or 9 years, it's pretty extraordinary achievement and someone we're happy to continue to back. Slide 18, this is a new slide we've put in, and I'm trying to give people a bit of context on obviously what we do as a firm. And you know, obviously with a concentrated portfolio, as I've said, people like to joke that obviously we don't do too much because it's such a small portfolio. So we'll try to give people a bit of an idea of how in-depth we can get with some of these businesses, some of the analysis that we do. So, you know, through the quarter as an example, one of our team members went to China, did a tour of the Chinese operations for the Costa Group, you know, did a end market site tour in China. You know, you go through, as I've mentioned before, over the years, you know, went to a couple of Alibaba supermarkets, for example, and spoke with some of their fresh produce contacts. Why does this matter? Well, in the case of Wingara or Costa Group, you can buy Driscoll's raspberries. In some of these supermarkets, you can buy meat that's stored in Wingara cold storage facilities from Alibaba, maybe as an example. It really gives you an idea of what the demand profile is, what people are looking for, you know, how hard it is to deal in China, for example. We also managed to source a government consultant, you know, who was also quite a seasoned farmer and was a representative of a large fodder industry group. You know, so it gives you another understanding of what they see in regards to the competitive landscape for Wingara. Who are the competitors? What are they doing? What are they spending their money on? What are some of the challenges? What other people are saying about Wingara, for example, you know, ex-employees, customers. So it gives you a very thorough understanding of those two businesses in that case. Now, in regards to CML Group, we've managed to track down a former executive, say at ScotPac, a classic funding group. You know, they're two unlisted businesses now that, you know, would come up against CML all the time. So it gives you a very good feel of how their product offering is any different to CGR. Is it different? Is it less competitive? Are their funding costs more expensive or cheaper? Are they looking to explore, you know, different avenues in regards to different product offerings and services? And then finally on M&F, so, you know, the minutes trading business has been topical for M&F because that was essentially the cause of the more recent downgrade. So we're able to speak with someone who used to run Global One, which is a very, very large minutes trading business globally. Understand how that business works and I suppose the visibility they have and what are some of the structural issues there or potentially, but also actually had worked with M&F before over the years, so gave some great insight to, you know, his view on the management team, some of the execution issues, some of the growth opportunities in their customer base. You know, been able to speak with a number of consultants and senior executives at some of the major telcos in Australia. Some of the people who work with NBN, you know, some probably in regards to, you know, not just M&F, but BSA, for example, Service Stream, how, you know, with everyone coming off the copper network, how that's going to change the industry over the next 12 to 24 months. And more than that last piece, a former seed investor, and these people are quite hard to track down, at Twilio, so a big CPaaS player out of the US. So they provide cloud-based call center software. You know, they rely on people who have VoIP networks and APIs and the software capability, such as MNF, to run their software. And, you know, this is a business that's capped at tens and tens of billions of dollars. So very important to understand how they're thinking and how MNF really fits into their view of the world and what they require from MNF. Probably one of the most the topical pieces to finish off this presentation, slide 19, is capital management. And I've got a couple of questions on this. I've gone through five pieces here in regards to all three of our potentially. So obviously it's made up of what we think of five key parts to, you know, capital management and NTA management and managing the share price. And the first part of that is obviously dividends. So, you know, we try to grow a stream of fully franked dividends. We think over time, if we can do that, then people will become much more trusting of the brand of NAOS, and they understand the, I suppose, the performance will be up and down. But as long as that dividend profile can be maintained, then it gives an element of comfort that the share price over time will be higher than what it is today. I've also put in a fact there, and I wanted to highlight this, that with our DRP, obviously we acquire shares on market if it's below NTA, and people say, well, that, you know, maybe that doesn't do too much. But since NSE has been under NAOS management control, to give you an idea, so we've acquired 2.49 million shares in NSE just over the past year and a bit. So it's pretty significant. You know, that'd be over 1% of NSE's issued capital, to give you a rough idea. So it is significant. It does provide a, you know, I suppose not a base for the share price, but it does provide a mechanism where you can support the share price and hopefully close that discount. Obviously, indirect costs are a big bit. You can see there, you know, we were the first ever LIC to essentially pay for all listing fees for our NAC, which is the LIC we did many, many years ago and was essentially an industry first at that time. And obviously, when you look at board fees and whatnot, they have been significantly reduced across all of our LICs and will be some of the lowest in the industry. You know, alignment's a big one. As I've said, you know, I don't own any shares outside of the three LICs. Family and friends are probably some of, or if not the largest holders in the LICs. And that's because we want to be aligned with all of our shareholders, not just on performance, but obviously because of that whole discount and premium to NTA issue. You know, brand awareness is a very big one. People think it doesn't mean much, but at the end of the day, people don't know NAOS and they're not going to know the three LICs and they're not going to acquire the shares if they feel like it or if they feel the need to. So essentially, obviously, we spend a lot of time on communications with all of our shareholders, as you would be aware. Some appreciate it, some don't. But obviously, we try to be a little bit more informative, so have some more education pieces that we publish on publications such as Cufflinks. And obviously, we do a roadshow twice a year in six capital cities where we, you know, we get over 1,000 investors coming along to understand what we're doing and why, what's worked and what hasn't. And then that the last piece is really, you know, the buyback. And in regards to NSC, I got a question on this and I'll answer it now. But at the end of the day, this is, the view of the world is this. If we believe we have an undervalued portfolio, as we have in NSC, so we believe our core investments are already undervalued, then we believe it's the best use of shareholders' capital to acquire shares at a discount, in this case of 17% or 18%, because you're getting into a portfolio that's already undervalued at an even bigger discounted price. And for every share that we can acquire, it's actually moving the NTA up. I think from our point of view, it's not necessarily about closing the discount in the short term, but it's about supporting that NTA and driving that NTA higher so that when the portfolio does hopefully perform at some stage, a lot of the investors that want to get out of NSC have already done so. So the kickback to NTA and hopefully to a premium, if we can perform, is significant because a lot of those, I suppose, sellers of the stock have been removed and we've been able to move the NTA higher because we've acquired shares. And, you know, someone made the comments that, you know, is this going to be a platinum buyback. So if anyone's looked at platinum over the years, they've announced a buyback for the last 2 or 3 years and they've bought back zero shares. You know, obviously our first day to acquire shares was yesterday. If anyone's read the announcement, you would have seen that we bought back close to, off the top of my head, it might have been 40 to 50% of all shares traded yesterday. So this is a buyback that's going to participate as long as it's in best interest of all shareholders. And essentially, as long as we can move that NTA higher, that's all that matters from a board point of view. So it will participate, it will be active as much as it can be, as long as it comes down to the best interest of shareholders and it meets that objective. Finishing off, there is an appendix. I'm not going to touch on slide 21 because everyone understands, hopefully, how the three LICs differ in regards to their investment universe. Slide 22 looks at our investment process and obviously really funnels down the portfolio or the investment universe from 2,800 stocks into 50 to 80 and really what are some of the exclusions and why we exclude so many businesses. Our ESG framework on slide 23, which I've already touched on, and then obviously slides 24. You know, to give people an idea, I don't think there's any other LIC that releases this information, but to give people a bit of clarity, you know, if you look at NSC, for example, we've added 900 new shareholders over the past 15 months in gross terms. So it took us 6.5 years to probably get to 3,000, and we've added 900 in just over 12 months. You know, what's more astonishing is in NSC, it's probably been 1,700 to 1,800 that have left. So it shows you some of the churn in that portfolio, albeit it does look like it is definitely starting to slow down. Hence why we think it's an adequate time to hopefully initiate the buyback and, you know, support or acquire those shares and cancel them at a big discount to NTA. But you can see that over the journey, we have been able to add shareholders consistently year on year across our two other LICs. And slide 25 just touches on the brand of communication and how you can stay in touch with us if you so be. Or if you so wish, the team at NAOS, slide 26, I've touched on, you'll see obviously a new director there, Sarah Williams, which I mentioned at our roadshow, which would be a huge assistance to me and I'm sure to the rest of the board. And then slide 27 just looks at three charities that we give back as NAOS Asset Management, the manager. So obviously we donate approximately or a bit over 1% of our revenue. And we donate back to Bush Heritage Greening Australia and the RFDS in Adelaide. So before I move on to questions, I've just got a couple of questions here. I've touched on the buyback, so if I do get another question, I'm happy to take it. But as I said before, this is a buyback that will be active. You know, we view it as a buyback to acquire shares at a discount to NTA, a significant discount to NTA. So for every share that we cancel, it actually moves the NTA up. And we also view it as buying a share into an already discounted portfolio. As I said previously, on the first day of trading, we acquired 40 to 50% of the shares on issue on day one. Not saying that that will keep going at that rate, but this will definitely be a buyback that is active and does participate, and it won't be buying back no shares at all over a 12-month period. Another question I got, and it's a good question. A question from Peter, I can't pronounce your last name, but it touches on an investment in NCC and obviously topical. It's a business called Saunders. And essentially the context of the email goes along the lines of, well, how do you reconcile this to fit in, I suppose, to the philosophy of protecting investors' capital? And that's a good question, fair point, and I'm happy to take it on the chin. And obviously Peter's view has obviously looked at the first half and said, you know, it's running at a small loss, barely cash flow positive and no dividend. So I suppose my rebuttal to that, or the investment, thesis around Saunders is this. You know, this is a business that's been around for, you know, decades, not yesterday. It's been around for 30, 40 years. It operates in an industry where there's only three players and one's probably somewhat financially constrained. It has a balance sheet of, you know, essentially, it's capped at $35 million, has $10 million in cash, and has $5 million in freehold property assets with no debt. So you can see when you look at the EV that you're paying next to nothing. Obviously, the issue is there's no earnings, but this is a business that's got a revenue base of 70 million, and they haven't been able to contribute or deliver a margin. What's driven that is probably a lot of underinvestment in the space that they operate in. We've done a lot of work in regards to looking at what some of their customers are doing. You can go to council websites. You can look at some of people who have been applying for development approvals and whatnot, so you can see what work is around the corner. And we think the new management team at Saunders has been there now for 2 to 3 years. They've made a lot of efficiency gains. They've closed down their manufacturing facility out at Bankstown. They've taken a lot of cost out of the business. They've been able to grow the revenue base. We think a lot of their big customers are not far away from making some substantial commitments. And we also spent a lot of time with on speaking to someone at one of their competitors who recently resigned, and a large competitor been there for 40 years. And his view was the same. He sees a lot of investment coming back into this space. And when there is further investments, there will be a significant uptick, hopefully, in the Saunders share price, and obviously in regards to the earnings potential of this business, because it has been around for years. It actually paid a dividend for every year since listing until last year. So it has had consistency before, albeit they've clearly gone through a rough patch now. But we think this is a business where you're not going to obviously do your dough because of the balance sheets and the property assets. And it's got a very credible management team who built his own business up before and sold to a large listed business. And we think this is a business that is very much off the radar for the points that you mentioned. But when it becomes back on the radar, it'll probably be too late for a lot of other people looking to acquire a stake in this business, because it'll be much higher than where it is today, if all goes to plan. Now, with that, Lisa, I'm happy to take any questions that are on the call.
Thank you so much, Sebastian. If anybody would like to ask a question, press star one on your phone now and you'll be placed in a queue. So star one to ask a question. Nobody's pressed, Sebastian. Again, star one if you'd like to ask a question. Sebastian, we have no questions.
Okay. Well, as
actually, Sebastian, yep. We do. Are we okay to take it? I'll just grab the name. Won't be one moment. Thank you, Sebastian. We have Graham Hand to ask a question. Go ahead, please, Graham.
Hi, Sebastian. It's Graham here from the Cufflinks newsletter.
Hi, Graham. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for your presentation. Enjoyed that. You mentioned the buyback on NSC. What are the buybacks on the other two LICs? What are your thought processes there?
Yeah, so obviously NCC actually trades at a premium, so that one's all right. To be honest, it's quite hard to manage when you've got one that trades at a premium, one in the middle, and then one at a big discount. It's somewhat frustrating. But at least we've got a playbook to work off to hopefully fix the issue. NAC trades at a discount, and NAC is obviously very topical for us because it's where we own almost 20% of it. The big difference, and we've spoken about this at a board level, is the big difference between NAC and NSC is probably a couple of things. So obviously, NAC is a lot smaller, has a market capitalization of 50 million compared to 100 and something million. And has a much more illiquid turnover, I suppose. So yesterday, I don't think it traded, whereby NSC traded 200,000 shares. So it's very top heavy in that regard. So it's something we would look at, and we have been looking at. But at the same time, we really want to make sure that we're doing the best thing for shareholders, and we are comfortable that whatever action we take is the same, you get the same outcome, I suppose. So when we do a DRP buyback, for example, it actually has a much bigger effect on NAC because it's so illiquid, whereby NSC, as I mentioned with some of those shareholder stats, you can see that it's just been almost not a mass exodus. There's been just a huge turnover in the shareholder numbers, and something that which we just never, I suppose, saw coming at that sort of rate. So it was really adequate that a buyback sort of came in because there was such liquidity there to take advantage of, whereby in NAC there's almost no liquidity. But that's not to say it's something we wouldn't look at.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Sebastian. We don't have any other questions in the queue.
Okay. Well, as everyone knows, I get emails and phone calls from all investors, big or small. So if you do have a question, query, comments, suggestion, please don't hesitate to email me or any member of the team and I'll send it to me, and I'm more than happy to jump on the phone. I even wrote a letter last week as well, if so be it. So if you do have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Otherwise, hopefully I'll be in touch in next quarter for the end of FY19, hopefully with some better performance figures, and on our, I suppose, end of year roadshow as well. So thanks again for your support, and we'll be in touch soon. Thank you.